Eddie, the freshman year. Chapter 7. The Spring Season, Part 2. The next morning, Eddie is waiting for Kathy an hour ahead of the usual time. Kathy comes out of her house to meet Eddie. Eddie asks, "How are you doing?" Kathy replies, telling Eddie, "I'm doing much better than I expected." Eddie asks Kathy, "Now what?" Kathy replies, "We just sit here for an hour." Kathy tells Eddie, "After school today, we are going to the portal, and our future selves will be riding up right here on our bicycles, and we'll ride over to Mahoney's house with them." They then put Eddie's bicycle in the garage. Kathy tells Eddie, "Okay. Now we just wait." Eddie asks Kathy, "Do you think this will work?" Kathy replies, "I was up for 3 hours thinking about this. It will work." After an hour, they walk to school, with Kathy reminding Eddie, "Remember, this day will not be the same after I get done with it." When Eddie and Kathy arrive at school, Kathy is wearing her torn clothing from yesterday. Her torn clothing attracts a lot of attention from both students and teachers. Rumors fly around in the morning, and by afternoon, everyone knows exactly what happened yesterday after the meet. Whenever Kathy is asked about her torn clothes, she tells them, "It's a new style by a designer named Paul Mahoney." Eddie, seeing Mahoney in the hall during class change, tells him, "I will kick your ass, you piece of shit. I don't know when I'm going to do it. Maybe today, maybe next week, or maybe over the summer. But I will kick your ass as sure as the sun rose this morning." Eddie's open-ended threat leaves Mahoney with a high level of uncertainty and will cause him to walk around in constant fear over the next few months. The end of the day arrives, and Kathy is ready to put her plan into action. Kathy and Eddie walk to Kathy's house, where Eddie's bicycle is waiting for him. Kathy tells Eddie, "Mahoney takes his car to school, and I hear he leaves a little early so he can drive past bus stops and show off his car." Eddie asks, "Where does he live?" Kathy replies, "Over on Rugby Road, off of Polo Drive." Eddie replies, "Oh, over in the rich neighborhood." It figures. Kathy and Eddie arrive at Kathy's house. They leave their books, get their bicycles, and ride to the portal. As they are riding down the driveway, Eddie asks Kathy, "So, when we come back to this morning, will I still have my bicycle here?" Kathy tells him, "Yes. It has to be here, because it was here this morning." Eddie asks, "And we'll be waiting at your house for ourselves." Kathy replies, "Yeah." Eddie is impressed that Kathy is so sure of herself. When they arrive at the portal, Kathy raises her right hand and says, "Today, at 6 a.m. Kathy and Eddie are immediately transported back in time to this morning before school started. Eddie asks, "Why so early?" Kathy replies, "I don't want to rush. I want to make sure that I get this right." Kathy and Eddie ride past Kathy's house, and then to the other side of the town where Mahoney lives. It only takes them a few minutes to get across town. They pass Mahoney's house, and Kathy mentions, "There's his car." Mahoney's car, a current model year blue Corvette, is parked in the driveway. Eddie tells Kathy, "Mahoney was in school today. I saw him." Kathy replies, "Good. All is going according to plan then." Kathy tells Eddie, "Okay. Now we go back to my house and wait." When they get to Kathy's house, they go to the side yard and sit and wait. After a while, Kathy, who is all excited, points to the driveway and tells Eddie, "Here you come." Kathy waves to Eddie, who arrived early this morning, as he rides up. She motions for him to come to the side of the house. Kathy exclaims, "Awesome. Now I have two of you." Eddie, who just came through the portal with Kathy, tells her, "Wow. It worked just like you said." Kathy tells the two Eddies, "Okay. Now we just have to wait for me to come out of the house." In a few minutes, Kathy walks out of the house, looking for Eddie. Kathy whispers to her counterpart from behind a bush, "Hey, we're over here." Kathy and Eddie, with their early morning counterparts, get on their bicycles and ride to Mahoney's house. They, however, take slightly different routes for obvious reasons. Once they arrive at Mahoney's house, they hide their bicycles behind some bushes in a neighbor's yard. Kathy, who just came through the portal, tells her counterpart, "No changes. Just like I, you, or is it we? Ha ha. Just as planned." Kathy tells Eddie and his counterpart, "Squat down behind Mahoney's car where he won't see you." Kathy instructs Eddie and his counterpart, "If he gets physical, then come and rescue us." As planned, Kathy and her counterpart walk a little way down the sidewalk in opposite directions, waiting for Mahoney to leave for school. 15 minutes go by, and Mahoney comes out of the front door. Kathy sees him coming down the walk, signaling to her counterpart that he is leaving. They both walk toward each other as planned, arriving in front of Mahoney's house at the same time. Kathy, wearing her torn clothing, yells out to Mahoney, "I am Katerina Karakova." Kathy's counterpart is wearing the same torn clothing, but is standing 10 feet away in the other direction. Her counterpart also yells out, "I am Katerina Karakova." Mahoney freezes and stares and appears as if he is ready to panic. Kathy and her counterpart yell out in unison, "We are Katerina Karakova." With their arms motionless at their sides, Kathy and her counterpart walk very slowly toward Mahoney. Mahoney looks to his left, then to his right, and freezes, then goes into a full-blown panic attack. Kathy and her counterpart again yell out, "We are Katerina Karakova." Mahoney panics, drops his books and his car keys on the ground, and runs back into his house screaming, "This can't be happening. I must have killed her. No." Kathy gives her counterpart a high five. Eddie and his counterpart have been watching from behind Mahoney's car as Kathy and Kathy's counterpart both scared the crap out of Mahoney. Once Mahoney is inside, Kathy instructs Eddie and his counterpart, "Okay. Back on the bikes. We're out of here." They all leave the scene and stop around the corner. Kathy tells everyone that went perfectly, right according to plan. Kathy then gives her counterpart a hug, telling her, "I might be the first person in the world to hug myself." They all then ride back to Kathy's house, again taking separate routes. Once at Kathy's house, Kathy tells her counterpart and Eddie's counterpart from this morning, "Well, we're headed back to the portal, but you guys have to go to school." Kathy's counterpart asks, "What happens if we go to the portal and you guys go to school?" Kathy answers, saying, "You know, I'm going to have to think about that one." Eddie and Kathy head to the portal as their counterparts walk to school, knowing that, in the altered universe, Mahoney will be absent from school today. Once they return through the portal and get back from the past, Kathy remarks to Eddie, "Oh, good. We're still here." Eddie asks, "How in the world were you able to figure all this out?" Kathy tells Eddie, "I missed a lot of sleep thinking about it last night." Eddie remarks, "That was pure genius, Katerina Karakova." Kathy replies, "Thank you. When that asshole knocked me over, I felt like he broke every bone in my chest. I thought I was going to die. He shouldn't be allowed to get away with that." Eddie replies, "He'll probably, at least, get suspended." Kathy replies, "No, he won't. His father's an attorney. He'll get the little twerp out of it somehow." Kathy and Eddie ride back to Kathy's house, both wondering how they may have changed the future. When they get back to Kathy's house, Eddie tells Kathy, "Good news. I don't see any sign of us here." Kathy laughs, telling Eddie, "Yeah. If we did, we'd probably feel like Mahoney did when he saw both of me." Kathy and Eddie go inside for a while and relax. Kathy puts on the power of love as they both sit back and listen. Kathy closes her eyes and begins to fall asleep. She tells Eddie, "I can't believe I'm so tired. Eddie reminds Kathy, "Well, you've been through a lot in the last 2 days." Kathy replies, "Yeah, that's right. I'll be a lot better in the morning, and tomorrow's Friday." Kathy then mentions to Eddie, "Do you know what I'm going to say the next time I see Mahoney?" Eddie replies, "No. Tell me." Kathy tells him, "I'm going to say to him, we are Katerina Karakova." Eddie and Kathy start laughing, and Eddie knows that Kathy is back to normal again. Eddie stays with Kathy for a while, and then he has to head home. Even though it's early, they give each other a goodnight kiss. Both of them desperately need sleep, so it will be an early night for both of them. The next day at school, shortly after the morning announcements, another announcement comes over the loudspeaker. The expected words are announced, "Will Paul Mahoney please report to the principal's office?" Kathy whispers to herself, "I can't even imagine what that's all about." Another 10 minutes go by, and the same announcement comes over the PA system. Kathy then whispers to Paula, "I guess he didn't make it to school today." If that is the case, it suits Kathy just fine. She'd prefer not to see Mahoney around school anyway. All during the day, gossip flies about the incident after the track meet. Many students speculate what could have happened to Paul Mahoney. A rumor is being spread that he was carted off to jail. By the end of the day, one fact has emerged to dispel all of the rumors and speculation. Mahoney has been admitted to the hospital. Not just any hospital, mind you. Mahoney has been admitted to a psychiatric hospital. During the hospital admission, he is reported to have been repeatedly screaming, "There's two of her now. She's coming to get me." The nervous breakdown after the final track meet, followed by seeing two of Kathy, was far too much for Mahoney to handle. Mahoney's anger and bitterness have been brewing all year. After holding it in for the entire year, he finally snapped. It's a good thing for Mahoney that he is in the hospital. Dr. Karakova will be pressing assault charges. If Mahoney were not in the hospital, he would likely be on his way to jail right now. With the regular track season now over, Eddie and Kathy walk home together after school. On the way, Eddie asks Kathy, "Did you hear about Mahoney?" Kathy replies, "Yeah. And I don't care that he's in the hospital. Everyone is a whole lot safer now, especially me." Kathy also informs Eddie, "My dad is going to press charges against that jerk." Eddie reassures Kathy, "He's gone after this year anyway." Kathy sighs and replies, "You're right. After this year, he's gone for good." Eddie asks, "So, is there anything you want to do? We have all this time." Kathy tells Eddie, "When I get home, I want to listen to my song, then we can go ride somewhere. I want to ride somewhere that's quiet." Eddie replies, "Yeah, I can see that." Kathy listens to her song, and then they head to Eddie's house. Kathy tells Eddie, "I'll ride my bicycle, and you can run next to me." Eddie suggests, "I could just carry you and your bicycle. After all, I haven't worked out much today." They both laugh and decide that they would walk Kathy's bicycle to his house. Eddie needs a few days of rest from running anyway. Next week, it will be back to training again in preparation for the state invitational track meet. When they arrive at Eddie's house, Eddie suggests a park that is not too far away. In fact, only a few people know that the park is even there. When they arrive at the park, it is completely deserted. They have the whole park to themselves, which suits Kathy just fine. Riding over to the swings, they swing for a few minutes. Eyeing a park bench in the shade, Kathy suggests they go over to that area of the park and sit for a while. They sit on the park bench for barely a minute, then Kathy lands on Eddie's lap. Kathy and Eddie affectionately embrace each other, holding each other tightly. Kathy gets a little wild and kisses Eddie like she never has before. They get off the bench and lay on the grass, continuing to embrace each other. As time goes by, it stands still for Kathy and Eddie, who are again in a world of their own. After a while, Kathy lays with her head on Eddie's chest as they fall deeper in love with each other. Kathy whispers to Eddie, "I think I might have a wild side." Eddie replies, "I suspected that. The hula hoop gave it away." Kathy replies, "My hula hoop." "Really? How is that?" Eddie whispers, "No one can hula hoop like you do and not be a little on the wild side." Kathy sighs and whispers, "Yeah. Maybe you're right." They lay on the grass for a while, but the time to go home arrives too soon. Kathy tells Eddie, "My parents are going out for dinner tonight. I guess we need to get going." Eddie replies, "Yeah, it's Friday. So my family is going out too." Kathy comes up with a wonderful idea and tells Eddie, "Hey, maybe our families can all go out together." Eddie exclaims, "That would be awesome." They get on their bicycles and ride to Eddie's house to see if they can make the arrangements. When they get to Eddie's house, Eddie and Kathy ask his parents if they want to go out to dinner with Kathy's family. Eddie's father tells Kathy, "Sure. We'd love to go out to dinner with you and your parents." Kathy calls her parents, who tell her they would like to join Eddie's parents for dinner. Eddie's and Kathy's parents have briefly met once before at the state invitational meet, but since Kathy's father had to fulfill his officiating duties, they did not get much of a chance to talk. Since Kathy and her bicycle are at Eddie's house, she decides she'll ride with Eddie's family to the restaurant. Everyone decides on Italian food, since Eddie and Kathy have taken a liking to pizza recently. When they meet at the restaurant, Eddie and Kathy reintroduce their parents to each other. The parents order typical Italian dishes, whereas Eddie and Kathy split a pizza. Interestingly, Eddie's mother tells him, "Eddie, you shouldn't eat so much pizza. You're going to get fat." Eddie replies, "Since I've been going out for pizza with Kathy, my times have gotten better, and I can lift more weight." Eddie's father mentions, "You can lift more weight and run faster because of Kathy, not the pizza." Everyone laughs, starting the evening out with everyone displaying a good sense of humor. After dinner, Eddie's and Kathy's parents agree that they must do this more often. Eddie and Kathy were certainly glad to hear of those plans. They love the time they have together, so more time is a good thing. On the way out of the restaurant, Kathy, mentioning to her parents, says, "My bicycle is still at Eddie's house. Can I ride back with him?" Eddie's younger brother, John, mentions, "You just left it there, so you have to come back to get it." Young kids do that sort of thing, so they figure the older kids do it as well. Eddie tells Kathy, "It looks like he just busted you." Kathy replies, "Yep. Guilty as charged." Kathy gets to ride home with Eddie and his family. Eddie's brother sees that Kathy's well-thought-out plan to purposely leave her bicycle at their house worked. Everyone has another good laugh as they head out to their cars. The next week goes rather well for everyone, except for Mahoney, who has not been to school all week. The state invitational meet is coming up in a week, so those who are invited practice after school. Most of the practice sessions involve the relay team members perfecting their handoff skills. Mr. Fraser gives the team Thursday and Friday off so that they will be fully recovered for the meet on Saturday. Mr. Fraser did instruct the team, however, to not eat pizza on Friday night. Somehow the word got around that some team members frequent a certain pizzeria after practice. Pizza now seems to be the official food of the track team. The morning of the spring track state invitational meet arrives, and the bus leaves early, at 6:30 a.m. The track meet will take the entire day. For Eddie, the 100-yard dash is one of the first events of the meet, and the 4x440 relay is the last event of the day. There will be a lot of time between the two events, hopefully giving Eddie and Kathy, Mark and Paula, and Johnson and Barbara some time to be together. It's a sure bet, however, that they won't be going out for pizza at lunch. The bus arrives at the State University, which happens to be the school where Kathy's father is a professor. Dr. Karakova is today's meet director. He will be finding some time during the meet to watch Eddie run, per strict instructions from Kathy. As they are exiting the bus, Kathy tells Eddie, "Now you get to see my dad's track. It's pretty awesome." Eddie asks, "What's awesome about it?" Kathy replies, "Well, for one, there's a sand track, so it's like running on the beach." Eddie replies, "I'm not falling for that one, Katerina Karakova." Kathy replies, "No, really. Your 100-yard dash time will be about 25 seconds on the sand track." Eddie tells her, "You're up to something. I can tell." She replies, "No, I'm not, really. There really is a sand track. You'll see." When they get to the track, the entire team is impressed. The outdoor venue appears suitable to host an Olympic-type event. Mr. Fraser takes the team to their designated area. Kathy asks Mr. Fraser, "Can I go show Eddie something? It will only take a few minutes." Mr. Fraser curiously asks, "Show him what?" Kathy replies, "The new sand track. It's on the other side of the main track, across from the bleachers." Mr. Fraser replies, "Sure. I'm coming too. I want to see it," then tells the rest of the team to unpack their equipment. Mr. Fraser and Eddie follow Kathy to an area adjacent to the main track, clear across from the stands. When they come up to the 220-yard sand track, Kathy says to Eddie, "See? A sand track." Eddie knew Kathy had something up her sleeve. Kathy adds, "They put it in last year." Eddie asks, "What's it for?" Mr. Fraser answers, telling Eddie, "When you run in sand, especially barefoot, you force certain muscles to work harder, giving much better leg muscle development." Eddie mentions, "I run on the beach a lot over the summer." Mr. Fraser replies, "I remember you mentioned that once over the winter season." Mr. Fraser now has the idea that he should look into obtaining a sand track for the high school. As they head back to the team, Kathy bumps Eddie's hip with hers, telling him, "See, there really is a sand track." While the team settles in, the first half hour is filled with registration and paperwork for the coaches. Mr. Fraser and Barbara take care of the administrative work. The 100-yard dash is scheduled to begin early, so Eddie is stretching and doing some light warm-ups. Braden is looking up at the bleachers, trying to find Wendy. Johnson is not fully awake yet, but he doesn't need to be since his events aren't until later. Mark is sitting back, with his legs crossed and his hands behind his head. Mark is no doubt thinking of new ways to distract runners before the race. It is obvious by the look in Mark's eyes that he has thought of a few really good ones. After the hurdles are out of the way, the meet announcer tells the runners in the 100-yard dash to proceed to the starting line. Once they are all present, the starter tells the runners, "You must run your best race. Only the top six times go to the final." Eddie is in the second heat, Mark in the first. Over at the finish line, Eddie sees Dr. Karakova, the meet director, where Kathy told Eddie he would be. The runners in the first heat are instructed to get ready. Mark looks over the field, recognizing most of the runners as someone he's beaten before. One of them is John Brady, who Mark worked over during indoor track, and then again in the spring track season. The starter announces, "On your marks." Mark looks over at Brady and says nothing. This is enough to shake up Brady, who seems to fall for every trick in the book. The starter then announces, "Set." The gun is fired, and six of the fastest high school runners in the state are off. At 50 yards, it is a two-man race between Mark and Brady. Brady, who is slightly ahead, is not about to be beaten by Mark again. Brady is forcing Mark to run his best. At 75 yards into the race, Mark and Brady maintain their position, both running at about the same speed. At the finish line, Brady crosses first. Mark, who is very close behind, comes in second place. Finishing far behind Mark, it appears none of the other runners in this heat will make the final. Brady is now aware that Mark is a formidable competitor. If Brady makes the final, you can be sure he will run a faster race. Eddie is up next. He knows Kathy and her father are at the finish line, so he wants to run a good time. The presence of Kathy's father at the finish line somehow causes Eddie to think back to the day Mahoney hit Kathy. This gives Eddie an additional adrenaline surge. The starter tells them to get ready. The starter announces, "On your marks," followed in a few seconds by, "Set." As the gun is fired, Eddie is out of the blocks, already 2 steps ahead of the rest of the field by 10 yards. At 50 yards, it is a one-man race, Eddie versus the clock. Eddie crosses the finish line first, with no one remotely close to him. Kathy's father mentions to Kathy, "That was a very impressive run." Kathy's dad goes over to the timekeeper to find out Eddie's time. Kathy asks her father, "What did Eddie run?" He whispers to Kathy, "Unofficially a 9.6. He'll be in the final. But don't tell anyone until the official announcement. So will Mark, by the way." After Eddie and Kathy talk for a while, Kathy has to go back to work, and Eddie returns to the team area. He sees Mark talking with Paula. Paula and Mark are pointing to various areas of the track and seem to be discussing something interesting. Paula then breaks into a few sexy poses, with Mark nodding his head yes or no. This spurs Eddie's interest, so he walks over and asks, "Okay, what are you guys up to?" Paula smiles and replies, "Nothing at all. But we definitely need your help." Eddie remarks, "Okay. This is going to be good, whatever it is." Mark elaborates on his plan and begins by telling Eddie, "Damien Harrington, the guy who took the gold in the 40 during indoor track, is here, and Brady just edged me out." Eddie replies, and Mark explains his plan, telling Eddie, "During the 100-yard dash final, Paula is going to stand at the midway point of the track, looking really sexy. I'm going to tell Brady that Paula has had her eyes on him during the whole meet, and that she must like him. Then I'll point her out before the final and mention to him, if he doesn't believe me, look at her while he's running." Eddie replies, "That's a good plan, bro. He'll lose a few steps and fall behind." Eddie then asks, "So, what do you need me to do?" Mark tells Eddie, "I need you to tell Harrington that Paula has her eyes on him." Eddie replies, "You got it, bro." Mark points out to Eddie, "We're all going to be standing around for at least 5 or 10 minutes before the final begins, so that would be a perfect time to do it." Eddie agrees, and the plan is set. After the 100-yard dash preliminary heats are completed, the meet clerk compiles and examines the times. The times and lane assignments for the final are posted shortly afterwards. As he is talking with the mile medley relay team, Mr. Fraser instructs Kathy to go and find out who is in the 100-yard dash final. Kathy procures the requested information and brings it to Mr. Fraser, who looks at the paper showing the finalists and lane assignments. Mr. Fraser is exuberant because Eddie and Mark are both in the final. Mr. Fraser tells Kathy to round up Mark, Eddie, Paula, and Barbara for a brief team meeting. Giving both Eddie and Mark a high five, Mr. Fraser tells them, "Congratulations. You're both in the final." Mr. Fraser then gives them the scoop, explaining, "Eddie, you're the number 2 seed, and you will be in lane 4. Mark, you're the number 4 seed, and you will be in lane number 2. Mark asks, "Who else is in?" Mr. Fraser replies, "The number 1 seed is Harrington, who is in lane 3. And there's Brady, who is in lane 5. The other 2 runners should be non-contenders." Mr. Fraser then tells Barbara, "Barbara, I want you at the finish line with me." He continues, telling Kathy, "I want you in midfield, getting a photo of the runners." Mr. Fraser, coming to Paula, tells her, "And Paula, I want you at the start, and get a photo of the runners out of the blocks. Mark then asks, can Paula and Kathy switch positions? Mr. Fraser asks, why? Mark replies, I have a plan. Mr. Fraser asks, a plan? Mark tells Mr. Fraser, yeah. But we need to have Paula at mid-track. Mr. Fraser laughs and replies, I don't know what you guys are up to. But okay. Paula will be at mid-track. Fill me in about this plan after the meet. Mr. Fraser knows they are up to something big. He also knows that whatever plans they have conjured up are to gain an advantage, so he allows the change. Paula whispers to Mark, this is going to work a whole lot better than you think. The meet announcer makes the call for the 100-yard dash final. Paula quickly gets into position near mid-track. The finalists congregate around the starting line. Mark whispers to Eddie that Paula is almost in position and will be about 20 yards away until race time approaches. She will then move into her mid-track position after Brady and Harrington get a good look at her sexy body language. Mark asks Eddie, are you ready to go into action? Eddie replies, yeah. Let's go for it. Pointing out Harrington to Eddie, Mark tells him, there's your target. Mark then mentions, and here comes mine, as Brady walks up. Changing his tone from the meet earlier in the season, Mark approaches Brady, telling him, good luck. Brady returns the favor, wishing Mark good luck too. Mark, pointing out Paula to Brady, asks, hey, is that your girlfriend over there? Paula watches Brady, waiting for them to make eye contact. When Brady catches Paula's eye, a sexy smile comes across her face as she waves. Brady, who now seems to be Mark's best buddy for pointing this out, asks Mark, no. Who is she? Mark, seeing Brady's reaction, points out to him, I don't know. She was watching you during the preliminaries. Showing some interest, Brady replies, really? Mark then explains, I thought she was looking at me, but then I realized it was you. She was standing a little farther down during our first race. Setting Brady up for the fall, Mark tells him, take a look. She'll have her eyes glued to you during the whole race. Brady, who is now distracted, looks down the track at Paula a few times as he is getting ready. Meanwhile, Eddie approaches Harrington, telling him, hey. Congratulations on winning the 40 at the state meet this winter. Harrington replies, oh, thanks. Eddie, pointing to Paula, asks Harrington, is that your prize over there too? Harrington, somewhat confused, asks, what prize? Eddie replies, the girl. I thought she was with you. She's been checking you out big time. I thought she was your girlfriend. Harrington looks down the track at Paula, who smiles immediately when they make eye contact. After seeing Paula smiling at Harrington, Eddie mentions to him, see? Eddie then reveals, someone said she was watching you during the preliminaries. They thought you two were together. Harrington mentions, I wonder who she is. Eddie suggests, glance over at her during the race. I bet she'll be staring right at you. Harrington, who keeps glancing down the track at Paula, is also now hopelessly distracted. The starter tells the finalists to get ready. Harrington and Brady both look down the track at Paula. Paula, swinging her hips as she walks backwards to mid-track, looks in their direction and waves. This clears up any doubt in Brady's and Harrington's mind about what they just learned. The starter tells the finalists, on your marks. Brady, who is taking a while to get ready, keeps looking down the track at Paula. Harrington's hormones have kicked in instead of his adrenaline, causing him to become more relaxed and not physically ready for the race. The starter announces, set. The gun goes off and the runners are out of the blocks. At 10 yards into the race, it's a close race that anyone can still win. Harrington quickly develops a short lead, with Eddie right behind him. Mark appears to be tied with Brady, but it's too close to call who is ahead. At 40 yards into the race, Brady briefly turns his head to the right to look at Paula. While he turns and looks, his stride veers slightly to the right, and he must quickly correct his bearing and cadence. This is enough to cause him to briefly drop down to fifth place, eventually regaining his position in fourth place. Mark, now in third place, has his hope set on a medal. Harrington, on the other hand, waits until just before mid-track to glance at Paula. Harrington turns his head abruptly to the right for a split second to see if Paula is looking him over. When Harrington turns his head, he briefly steps out of his lane. He quickly regains his stride, never getting a good look at Paula. After Harrington's mishap, Eddie is now in first place. Any sprinter knows, or should know, that you should never turn your head while you are running. Turning your head while sprinting will have a tendency to cause you to run in the direction your head is turned, potentially causing you to leave your lane. In addition, intentionally turning your head to one direction will disrupt your stride and cadence. Distance runners do not have this problem. Generally, in distance races, tenths of a second do not matter. At the finish line, Eddie crosses first, taking the gold medal. Harrington follows right behind him, taking second place. Mark finishes right behind Harrington. Brady takes fourth place, completely unaware that Mark has thrown him under the bus once again. The other two runners have a better than expected finish, following Brady by only a tenth of a second or two. After the race, one of the lane judges is seen walking down the track. The lane judge makes the head timekeeper aware that the runner in lane 3 stepped out of his lane. The head timekeeper asks the timekeeper assigned to lane 3 if he saw it. Confirming the findings of the lane judge, the timekeeper assigned to lane 3 added that he thought the runner almost tripped for a moment. Stepping out of your lane results in an immediate disqualification. With two officials seeing the infraction, Harrington has no leg to stand on. Meanwhile, Mark, unaware of Harrington's disqualification, is happy that he got third place. Eddie and Mark exchange high fives while the runners stand around waiting for the announcement. Eddie remarks, "The plan worked." Mark replies, "Yeah, it took me a while this morning to come up with that one." If Mark was unable to distract one of the runners, Mark would have probably taken fourth place. Fourth place is no better than a participation trophy, worth absolutely nothing. But why distract only one runner if you can distract two? Due to the disqualification, the announcement is delayed for a short time. With the times finally verified, the meet announcer declares the winners. The long-awaited announcement arrives, as the meet announcer declares, in first place, running for Northside High, Edward Boganskaya. In second place, also running for Northside High, Mark Svoboda. In third place, running for Riverdale, John Brady. The announcer tells the winners, "Congratulations to all of you, and we will see you at the awards ceremony this evening." After the announcement, Mark, who is all excited, asks Barbara, "What happened? How did I get second place?" Barbara tells Mark, "The guy in lane 3 stepped out of his lane and was disqualified." Mark grins and replies, "Wow. Awesome." Mr. Fraser, Mark, Eddie, and the three girls then head back to the team area, celebrating the victory on their way. Kathy is again on Eddie's shoulders and Paula on Mark's. Both Brady and Harrington see Paula on Mark's shoulders. They both think, correctly for that matter, that Mark and Eddie had pulled something over on them. Brady and Harrington, who are both seniors, will not return next year. When they return to the bench, Mr. Fraser asks Paula, "Okay. What was all that about switching positions?" Paula replies, "Well, it was Mark's idea." Mr. Fraser questions Mark, "What exactly were you guys up to?" Mark replies, "Eddie was in on it too. It wouldn't have worked without him." Mr. Fraser then asks, "Will somebody please tell me what you guys were doing out there?" Mark then explains to Mr. Fraser in detail about his plan and how they conspired together. Mr. Fraser starts laughing and asks Mark, How did you come up with this? Mark replies, I needed a new way to mess with their heads. So, I put it together before the meet started. Paula reminds Mr. Fraser, well, you always said it's our job to flirt with the opponents if necessary. Mr. Fraser laughs and replies, I did say that, didn't I? Guilty as charged. Mr. Fraser tells Mark and Eddie, you guys never cease to amaze me. Kathy, who is crying with tears of joy, tells Eddie, you did it. You got first place. Eddie replies, yeah. And just think, at the beginning of the year I was wondering if I would even make the team. While they are talking, Kathy's father walks up to personally congratulate Eddie. He tells Eddie, that was a very fine run. Congratulations. Eddie replies, thank you. Thank you. Dr. Karakova informs Eddie, by the way, you're a freshman, and you're running college times. Eddie asks, what did I run? The meet director tells Eddie, a 9.5, but it's a rubber track so the times are usually a little faster than on the gravel track at your high school. Eddie looks at Kathy, telling her, see what happens to my times when I carry you all around town. Kathy replies, asking, how do you know it wasn't all that pizza? They all have a good laugh, but then the meet director has to excuse himself to resume his officiating duties. Eddie, Mark, and the rest of the team sit back and relax for a while. Getting a short break, Kathy, Paula, and Barbara join them. The next race will be the mile medley relay, which will be right before lunch. Braden asks Kathy, whatever happened to Mahoney? Kathy, quick to answer, tells Braden, he's still in the hospital, and I heard he's not getting out anytime soon. Kathy then reveals, my father was going to press charges against him, but then he decided not to since Mahoney is in the loony bin. The attorney basically told us that Mahoney's jail time is being served in the hospital. Braden comments, yeah, if that son of a bitch goes to a real jail, they are gonna rip him a new hole where he never had one before. Barbara asks, what? Braden explains, if you go to jail for assaulting a girl, you're in for a real ass kicking that's never gonna end until you get out. Kathy remarks, yeah, well it's a good thing for him that he's in the loony bin. Braden also mentions, if he goes to jail, they'll do some other shit to him too. But, I ain't saying what that is. Eddie looks at Kathy, telling her, well, the hospital sounds like a lot better alternative to jail. Kathy whispers back to Eddie, I'm glad we helped Mahoney out then. After a while, the call is heard for the mile medley relay. Zeno, Bell, Johnson, and Mitchell all get up and go to their race. Mr. Fraser tells Kathy to stay behind and find some lunch for the team. After Mr. Fraser is gone, Eddie tells Kathy, you heard him. You're in charge of lunch. Break out the pizza. Kathy sighs and replies, that's tomorrow. Kathy then tells everyone, there's a cafeteria on campus. They are supposed to have some good food and pizza. It's better than fast food. Everyone agrees to give it a try after the mile medley relay is over. The mile medley team returns from their event, taking second place. This is a good accomplishment, considering the strong field of runners this year. The mile medley team almost ended up in fourth place, but Mitchell, who ran the 880-yard leg, ran a smart race, and pulled off the win right at the end. Johnson will have to run again later in the 4x440 relay, and will be looking forward to winning another medal. The team then heads to the cafeteria for lunch, where they will hang out as a group until later this afternoon. Mr. Fraser does not want the 4x440 relay team out in the heat all afternoon before the race. By having the relay team sit in the air-conditioned building until their event, the runners will be able to deliver a better performance. About a half hour before the 4x440 relay, the relay team heads back out to the track. With the relay team now back in the team area, Mr. Fraser goes to check which heat the team will run in. Eddie remarks, I'm glad we were in the air conditioning. It's getting hot out here now. Mark mentions to Eddie, I wonder if we'll be up against Brady or Harrington again. Eddie replies, they'll be ticked off. Mark, changing the topic, asks, someday, this summer, can you tell me how you got so fast so quick? Eddie tells Mark, sure. No problem. It's really easy. Mr. Fraser returns with the good news. The news is that the team will be up against Henderson, Riverdale, and Centerville in the same heat. Mr. Fraser also informs them that they are in the first heat. Braden asks, Centerville, what was the deal with them? Eddie answers for Mr. Fraser, McCrutchen, McClutching, or whatever his name is. Mr. Fraser tells the team, it looks like the first heat will take all the medals from what I can see. The higher seeded teams have been clustered together, ensuring they run their best race. Mr. Fraser then reminds his team, you have beaten all these teams times in the past, but don't let your guard down. They have a score to settle. Mark replies, yeah. More than one score. Mr. Fraser knows exactly what Mark is referring to, since the gold medal that Harrington had his eyes set on will be draped around Eddie's neck shortly. Mr. Fraser tells Mark, see if you can think of something else to distract them since you have a few minutes. The meet announcer issues the call for the 4x440 relay teams to meet at the starting line. The team heads over, and Mr. Fraser notices Mark is noticeably limping. Mr. Fraser suddenly gets concerned and asks Mark, is there something wrong with your leg? Mark replies, no. I'm just faking it so they think I'm injured. Mr. Fraser quickly sees Mark's plan. If they think Mark is injured, they may not think that his team will be much competition, and therefore not run their best. Mr. Fraser then decides to change the lineup, telling Mark, okay, I want you to be the anchor. Having an injured runner as the anchorman may also give somewhat of an advantage, leaving the uncertainty alive as long as possible. Mark continues to limp to the starting line as Mr. Fraser informs the other team members of Mark's plan. Mr. Fraser tells Mark, limp around and make sure everybody sees you. Mr. Fraser also instructs Braden that he will be the lead-off man and to be quiet at the beginning of the race. Braden, being quiet, will certainly be a feat in itself. At the starting line, Harrington sees Mark limping. Harrington will be Henderson's anchorman. Brady, the anchorman for Riverdale, looks over at Mark, watching him as he limps. Both Harrington and Brady now feel like they will be on vacation during this race. Mark remains quiet, having nothing to say to any of his opponents. Many of the runners are now all too familiar with Mark's psychological warfare, and they are glad to see him keeping to himself for once. Barbara hands Braden the baton, and Braden enters the track. The starter makes sure the runners are all in position and ready to run. Once he is satisfied, the starter gives the command, on your marks, then, shortly after, announcing, set. The gun fires, and the first heat of the last event is underway. Braden takes an early lead, but not a whole lot of people notice. Most of the attention has been drawn to Mark, who is sitting on the ground as Paula works on his leg. Brady, a short distance away, can be heard laughing, telling a teammate, this race will be cake. After Paula works on his leg, Mark gets up and walks around. Braden has already handed the baton off to Johnson, but many people have missed noticing that Braden was clearly in first place during the transition. Mr. Fraser is watching all of this as it transpires, wondering how Mark comes up with these ideas. Johnson, in the meantime, is making good time and maintaining the lead. None of the competing teams are concerned about Johnson's lead because they figure Mark will quickly lose any lead Northside has managed to gain. Eddie is on the track waiting for Johnson. Another runner, who is also on the track waiting for a handoff, tells Eddie, it's not going to matter this time, dude. You guys are out of it. Eddie replies, yeah. Well, you still got to try. Johnson, who has maintained first place, hands off to Eddie. After Eddie receives his baton, Henderson, Riverdale, and Centerville all hand off in rapid succession. With Mark apparently injured, the three other teams think they will be vying for first, second, and third place during the final leg. Paula asks Mark, loud enough for the other competitors and coaches to hear, "Do you think you can do this?" Mark replies, "I think I can finish." Mark gets on the track, waiting for Eddie. Eddie has widened the lead by a significant margin, but the opponents do not seem to care. Eddie hands off the baton to Mark, who takes off like a jet plane. Harrington, waiting in the transition zone, watches Mark as he runs away with a perfect stride, wondering what in the world just happened. To Harrington, Mark appeared to be injured. Harrington, who is so focused on Mark's remarkable recovery, leaves the transition zone late, bungling the handoff. This ultimately causes Harrington to lose far more time than he can make up. Brady watches Harrington's bad handoff instead of focusing on his own. Brady's handoff is so poorly done that the baton is transferred with both runners nearly stationary. McCutcheon, from the arch rival Centerville, watches the commotion as it develops. McCutcheon leaves too late, causing a bad handoff that resulted in him dropping the baton, losing at least 10 precious seconds. Fortunately, for McCutcheon, the baton does not leave his lane, otherwise his team would be disqualified. Meanwhile, Mark is clearly in the lead, leaving a train wreck behind him. Mr. Fraser cannot believe what he is seeing. Kathy, Paula, and Barbara are all laughing so hard at what just happened in the transition zone. Mark sprints around the curve, headed toward the finish line without any competition in sight. Totally unaware of the carnage he left behind, Mark wonders where the other runners are. Mark crosses the finish line, with no one remotely behind him. He steps off the track and exchanges high fives with his other team members. Mr. Fraser and Paula fill Mark in on what transpired after he began his leg. Mark is quite surprised that his plan worked a lot better than expected. This was supposed to be the heat that produced the medalists. Instead, the handoff zone turned into a three-ring circus. The team returns to their area as the other heats continue. On the way, the team celebrates, but they will have to wait a while to see where they placed. Kathy is again on Eddie's shoulders. Paula is on Mark's shoulders, giving credence to the fact there was never really anything wrong with Mark's leg. The other teams also return to their area, watching painfully as Mark carries Paula. Harrington's and Brady's teams, who were expected to medal in this event, will likely go home empty-handed. If they had only focused on their own task and not paid attention to Mark and Eddie's distractions, they may have placed better in the 100-yard dash and the 4x440 relay. After the final heat, the coaches surround the meet clerk. The times are checked, rechecked, and verified by several officials. The announcement comes, with the meet announcer declaring to the coaches, "First place goes to Northside High." Mr. Fraser yells out, "Yes." He does not even wait to see who was in second and third place, but, instead, he runs back to the team to deliver the good news. After Mr. Fraser leaves, one of the coaches remarks to another, "Fraser's team is going to be a problem in the next few years. Those guys are all freshmen." The other coach replies, "Well, so, we're going to see 3 more years of this. Or worse, because the team is likely to be better in the upcoming years." Mr. Fraser returns to the team and delivers the good news, "You guys took first place." Celebration breaks out, with cheering that could be heard on the other side of the track. High fives follow, followed by a celebration kiss between a few of the couples. Mr. Fraser tells the team, "The medals ceremony is in 30 minutes. If you guys want to get a quick bite to eat, now is the time." Kathy and Paula look at each other and yell out, "Pizza." The whole team, including Mr. Fraser, wastes no time and heads to the cafeteria. They all decide to get pizza, including Mr. Fraser. After dinner, the team rushes to the closing ceremony, which is held on the track. They get there with no time to spare. The meet announcer opens the ceremony, introducing today's meet officials. He congratulates all the coaches and teams for their stellar performances. He then instructs the medalists to come down from the bleachers and meet at the shot put pad. Once there, they will be lined up by another official in the order in which they will receive their award. Following the awards for the hurdles, the program moves on to the 100-yard dash. The meet announcer states, first place in the 100-yard dash, running for Northside High, goes to Edward Boganskaya. As Eddie walks up and stands on the first place tier, the crowd cheers. The meet announcer continues, in second place, also running for Northside High, Mark Svoboda. Throughout the stadium, cheering continues, especially from the Northside bench where a few distinct female voices can be heard. The meet announcer announces, in third place, running for Riverdale High, John Brady. Once the medalists are on their tiers, the meet officials drape the medals around the winners' necks. The cheering continues as some photos are taken. The ceremony then moves on to the next event. Mark and Eddie return to the shot put area, waiting for their next award. Johnson, Mitchell, Zeno, and Bell placed in the mile medley relay event, and are called to take their place on the second place tier. Zeno and Bell are secretly happy that Johnson and Mitchell were reassigned to the mile medley team. If Mahoney retained his assignment to the mile medley relay team, he would have insisted that Ambrosini be on the team as well, and Zeno and Bell would not have received their medal today. Zeno and Bell are juniors and will return next year. Being beaten by a team with all seniors, the mile medley relay team has their eyes on a gold medal next year. The last award to be distributed is for the 4x440 relay. The meet announcer begins by introducing the winner, in first place, in the 4x440 relay, running for Northside High, Mark Svoboda, Eric Johnson, Edward Boganskaya, and Axel Braden. The team comes up and takes their place on the first place tier. The meet announcer announces the teams taking second and third place, which go to Northport and Washington respectively. This is a great surprise to everyone, except for those who were present at the great handoff debacle during the first heat. The teams receive their awards and, after the photos, return to their team bench. Kathy runs up to Eddie and greets him with a big hug and a kiss. After the field athletes receive their awards, the ceremony is over. The parents, family members, and friends come down from the bleachers and join the team. Eddie's parents congratulate him and the other team members. College scouts make an attempt to talk to Eddie about furthering his education. With his team and team's family members all celebrating together, they are not able to get to Eddie. Eddie drapes his 4x440 relay medal around Kathy's neck, which she will wear every day until school is over. The team heads to the bus, as this year's spring track season comes to a close. As Eddie and Kathy walk into school Monday, almost everyone notices Eddie's medal draped around Kathy's neck. Mark and Paula arrive at school, also with medals around their necks. As the lobby fills with students, they meet up with Braden, Johnson, and Mitchell. Bobby B. joins them, offering his congratulations. After the seniors graduate and are gone, next year Bobby B. will have a good shot at the state invitational meet. Throughout the day, they all receive congratulations from teachers and students for their achievements. The group has a good time celebrating their victory again in the lobby. Braden, wearing his medal from the indoor track state invitational meet in addition to his newly earned spring season medal, tells everyone, "I had my winter track medal engraved on the back." Eddie says to Braden, "Uh-oh. I can only imagine." Mark mentions, "I can't wait to see this." Braden shows everyone the back of his gold medal in the 4x440 relay that he earned during the indoor season, which is now engraved to read, "Axel Braden, Chief as Kicker." Eddie, who sees the inscription first, starts cracking up. Mark, also after seeing the medal, starts laughing. Braden shows everyone around, and in no time it seems like a party breaks out. The last week of school is the week for final exams, so there will be tests followed by more tests. With one more week to go, summer vacation is on the horizon. The students are counting down the days. Unknowing to the students, the teachers are also counting down the days. Truth be told, the teachers began counting down the days long before the students did. This will be a long week for everyone. But once it's over, a few weeks of freedom begins. Seated outside the principal's office near the end of the school year, Mr. Fraser awaits his annual performance review. This past year has been a very good one for Mr. Fraser. The track team had an undefeated season, and in several track meets, the team took first, second, and third place in all the events. Mr. Fraser is one of the most liked teachers in the school. And in physical education class, Mr. Fraser not only prepares the students physically for sports, but mentally as well. Mr. Maurice Crum, the principal, calls Mr. Fraser into his office 15 minutes past his appointment time and tells Mr. Fraser, "Have a seat." Mr. Fraser could have easily figured that out himself, as he was not expecting to stand during his performance review. Taking a seat, Mr. Fraser watches as Mr. Crum fumbles through a few papers, making himself appear more important than he really is. Mr. Crum opens the meeting, asking Mr. Fraser, "So, tell me, how do you think you've done over this past year?" Reviewing his accomplishments, Mr. Fraser reports, "Really well, if you ask me. The track team had an undefeated season. In a few regular season meets, the team swept every event. We've dominated both state invitational meets this year, walking away with a good number of medals. And next season, the track team is looking even better." Mr. Crum stares out into space, already knowing what Mr. Fraser is espousing. Under Mr. Fraser's coaching, the track team was unstoppable this past year. Moving on to his accomplishments in academics, Mr. Fraser continues, "In physical education class, I believe I've instilled in the students the motivation to follow their passion and to attack every challenge they'll face in their life with no fear. And that would be not only in sports, but in academics and employment as well. I've also motivated several students who were not on a sports team to take an interest in certain sports that I've noticed they excel at. One, in particular, was a sophomore, Raymond McDowell, who is now on the wrestling team and had an awesome season. Another was Luis Peña, who is one of the best soccer players in our school. He thought he'd never make the soccer team because all the other soccer players were a lot bigger and stronger than he was. I encouraged him to try out anyway, and now he's one of our star players. And there are a few other examples, too." Not sounding too impressed with Mr. Fraser's self-assessment, Mr. Crum interrupts, telling Mr. Fraser, yeah. We'll get to that in a minute." Mr. Crum hands Mr. Fraser a copy of his official performance review. Mr. Fraser reviews the appraisal of his performance, and his heart sinks in his chest. Following an uncomfortable moment of silence, Mr. Fraser asks Mr. Crum, "I don't understand this. How does my overall review fall into the category far below expectations? I thought I had a great year." Mr. Crum explains, "That was your own assessment of your performance. I don't necessarily agree with your assessment." As Mr. Crum is speaking, the words Mr. Fraser hears sound like they have traveled through a long tunnel and go in one ear and out the other. Mr. Fraser further reviews his performance assessment, becoming more depressed when he discovers the primary reason why he was downrated. Mr. Fraser interrupts Mr. Crum's diatribe, asking, "What's this comment about gross deviations from the state's physical education curriculum?" Mr. Crum replies, "Exactly that. You have not been following the published curriculum closely enough. For that, I had to rate you as far below expectations." Mr. Fraser exclaims, "What? I was one of the three contributors who wrote the state's physical education curriculum. I know every word, sentence, and paragraph in that curriculum." Mr. Crum bluntly replies, "Well, maybe you should take some time this summer and review the curriculum you claim to have written. Wanting an explanation, Mr. Fraser asks, "What part of the curriculum have I not been following?" Mr. Crum answers, "All of it, especially when it comes to track and field. Track and field is not supposed to be half the syllabus. Every time I look outside, you have the students running around the track." Mr. Fraser firmly replies, "I beg to differ. I do not, and I repeat, do not always have students running around the track." Not immediately addressing Mr. Fraser's concerns, Mr. Crum continues, "And for the record, the performance of the track team has nothing to do with your performance review. You get paid a stipend to coach track. And that's it." Reviewing his notes and laying out some evidence, Mr. Crum boldly informs Mr. Fraser, "Mid-September, during gym class, Edward Bogenskaya, Mark Svoboda, and Axel Braden were racing on the track while the rest of the class was playing football. You had your attention focused on the three track athletes, completely ignoring the rest of the class." Mr. Crum then drops the bomb, "I have at least a dozen more examples. Would you like to hear them?" Realizing that he will get absolutely nowhere with Mr. Crum, Mr. Fraser replies, "No. That won't be necessary." Not wanting to stay around for the rest of his review, Mr. Fraser asks Mr. Crum, "Are we done here?" Mr. Crum replies, "No. I'm just getting started." Listening as Mr. Crum derates his performance, the track coach sits back, waiting for the principal to finish what sounds more like a tirade than a professional meeting. During Mr. Crum's pontification, Mr. Fraser contemplates leaving his position as a physical education instructor and returning to his prior position as a trainer for an NFL football team. At least in the NFL, Mr. Fraser's efforts were greatly appreciated. Mr. Crum concludes, "Mr. Fraser, I suggest you conform and adhere to the state's physical education curriculum. You have all summer to review the curriculum, which I strongly suggest you do. As it stands, you are one step away from being put on probation. This year, an official warning will be placed in your file. And because of your poor performance this past year, I am unable to give you a cost of living adjustment. Do you have any questions?" Mr. Fraser replies, "No." Mr. Crum announces, "Good. We're done here. Have a nice day." Mr. Fraser stands up and walks out, clearly not happy with his performance review this year. The following day during lunch, Mr. Zunday perceives that Mr. Fraser is upset about something. Curious as to what the problem is, Mr. Zunday asks, "Is something bothering you, George?" Mr. Fraser replies, "Crum gave me a really shitty performance review. I'm now thinking I should return to the NFL. Mr. Zunday asks, "May I see your review?" Mr. Fraser replies, "Sure," and hands to Mr. Zunday Mr. Crum's assessment of one of the best physical education instructors in the state. Mr. Zunday reviews the assessment form and tells Mr. Fraser, "This is total garbage, George. If I were you, I would take this directly to Dr. Brooks." Mr. Fraser asks, "What is she going to do?" Mr. Zunday replies, "For one, she can override all this nonsense. And two, it will put Crum on notice that he is being watched." Mr. Fraser asks, "I wonder if she'll meet with me." Mr. Zunday assures Mr. Crum, "She will. I'm sure of it." Holding up Mr. Fraser's performance review, Mr. Zunday explains, "This is exactly why Dr. Brooks hired me as the district's athletic director. It's just another chapter in the ongoing John Davies saga. Who knows what Crum has up his sleeve this time? And besides, George, you significantly contributed to that curriculum. No one knows the curriculum better than you." Mr. Fraser agrees, stating, "I put a lot of work into that curriculum. Maybe I should meet with her." Abruptly ending the discussion, the bell rings, signifying that Mr. Zunday and Mr. Fraser have to get to class. Mr. Fraser never did make the appointment to meet with Dr. Brooks, the superintendent of schools. He was planning to do that sometime over the summer break when he had more time. However, During finals week, Mr. Fraser receives an intra-office memo stating that Dr. Brooks has called a private meeting with him. Mr. Fraser wonders what the meeting arranged by Dr. Brooks will be about. But he suspects the meeting has something to do with the unfavorable review he received. Truth be told, Mr. Fraser is sincerely hoping that he does not get fired. The last bell of the school year finally rings, and summer begins. Eddie and Kathy meet at the front of the school. They are joined by Braden and, shortly afterwards, Johnson. Since it is a beautiful day, everyone is walking home. Within a few minutes, the whole gang is together, and they head out. Paula mentions, "Hey, since we're all together, does anyone want to get pizza?" Kathy replies, "Sure. Why not? It's the end of the school year, and we don't have to wake up early tomorrow." It's not that Kathy or Paula needed a reason to get pizza. Any reason will do when it comes to pizza with this group. On the way out of the schoolyard, Mark notices Chuck is sitting under a tree with a few others. Mark mentions, "Hey, do you want to invite Chucky?" Everyone knew this was a joke, and they all break out in laughter. Braden sarcastically exclaims, "Hey, take a look at that. Chucky is smoking something." Kathy quickly mentions, "Yeah, pot." Hearing this, Eddie yells out, "Hey, Chucky. Don't you know doping will get you disqualified?" Chucky yells back, "Shut up, you bunch of jockheads." Mark tells Eddie, "Look at that. He called you a jockhead." Braden mentions, "He said, jockheads. That's plural. He's talking about all of us." Braden apparently learned something in Miss Starr's English class this year. Eddie jokingly cries out, "Oh, I'm so hurt. I don't know if I can take it anymore." Kathy reassures Eddie, "I think you'll get through this one. I know it's hard, but you'll make it." Kathy, on Eddie's shoulders, spreads her arms and yells out to Chucky, "Hey, Chucky. Look at me. I'm an aeroplane." Mark warns everyone, "You guys better be careful. It looks like Chucky is the captain of the doping team. He looks tough." They all then head down the road for the last pizza together of this school year.